the OTB Podcast Network. Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 5 o'clock. You can text us on 531-06. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope, on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in the App Store. So when we go to a sporting event, I think sometimes we take for granted what goes into the big day: safety and security, ambulance staff, catering, ticket operations, hospitality, entertainment about the big screen, crowd management. So what's all this going to look like as we cope better with COVID, hopefully emerge from the crisis, return to normal? What will event management look like in the future? Can we manage an event at the moment? At the moment, it doesn't seem that we can. So we're delighted to be joined on the Saturday panel for the next hour for this conversation by Pádraig O'Kane, the promoter of the Aer Lingus College Football Series, Kevin Moore, the MD of Legacy Communications, the sponsorship and communications agency, and Shane Dunn, the organiser of the Independence Festival and a promoter at MCD. Folks, good afternoon.
Hey, John.
That's what we'd normally be doing this weekend. Pádraig, you'd be entertaining Americans, I think, in Dublin. Would that be the case?
I think we're about 25 minutes from going live with ESPN Game Day from College Green to about 4 million audience in the US. So, yeah, that's what we're doing and getting ready for kickoff of a sellout of Aviva Stadium at 7 o'clock tonight. And again, East Coast TV with ESPN. So, yeah, it's a great day out there this morning, but it really is a great day for the amount of work we put into the game to end up watching a blank stadium and blank streets today. But that's just the world we live in at the moment, I guess.
Yeah, Navy and Notre Dame, the Aer Lingus College Football Series. Just tell us a bit about the series, Pádraig, for those who don't know.
Yeah, so it's come out of probably the success of, we've had a few American college football games here over the years, probably 96, been the last before the big game of 2012. And 2012 was Notre Dame Navy, as was 96. And that moved 35,000 people into Ireland. And it was a real boost for the economy. We were coming out of recessionary times when that game first started to be planning. It was the end of 2009-10. Kevin, indeed, was well involved from the Navy side, and we were involved from the Notre Dame side. But after that game hit Dublin, we all believed, wow, there's something here. Could we look at this and develop it on? And a number of things. When there was a game in Croke Park in 2014 between Penn State and UCF, and in 16, the first of our full-time games as a promoter was Boston College and Georgia Tech. So we certainly have got the appetite for a while, and them games were reasonably successful, but there was more out of it. So myself, along with our business partners in the States, Anthony Travel, set up a company called Irish American Events, and we got a group of like-minded people around us. Our title sponsor in Aer Lingus, Falls Ireland, Dublin City Council, Tourism Ireland, and a number of other like-minded private and public partnerships to come together and see how we put together a series of these events. Because the previous games, a lot of them was people came to Ireland for a reason. Our teams came, Notre Dame and Boston, because of the Irish connection, Penn State and UCF. Penn was in a sanction at the time. So, but the reality, what we discovered very, very quickly, if we wanted to convince games, our teams like Navy would have played here today, and Illinois, who will play here next year, please God, to give up their home game, we had to put a real practical financial package in front of them. So one, that would compensate them for giving up a home game day, and two, the international travel that's involved from moving them and the opposite team. So with a lot of work and a lot of partnership put together, I think it was October of 2018, I think you were there with us, John, and Kevin certainly was. We, on Taoiseach Ben, Leo Fredker, and a group of us launched a five-game series. We knew we had that game from February 2018, the game of today. So we launched a five-game series that first game would have been today, and it's 2 years, 2.5 years of work. We had 39,056 tickets sold into the United States. with a number of other thousands sold into Europe and the balance here in Ireland. So it would have been special. It would have been the largest movement ever of Americans for a single event to come outside the United States. And when you think events like Ryder Cups and so on around that, it's no mean feat. NFL in London, it's no mean feat to say that. But look, today for us is, bust ourselves down and start looking at next year. And I'm glad to also say Notre Dame and Navy are very focused to get themselves to be part of the five-game series now that'll start from next year.
Kevin, you're involved in communications around college football coming to Ireland. This is going to be a significant hit on the economy here.
Yeah, and it was a very difficult message to get right at the start when COVID started to realise, I suppose, and then communicate. So first couple of weeks, actually, the teams in the States needed time themselves to figure it out. But there's various estimates, you know, that would float around. But the benefit to the economy of that Navy-Notre Dame game was around $100 million back in 2012, because they would have holidayed around Ireland. It was a very wealthy set of Americans that would have come over, the alumni fans. And it has a huge amount of hotels, stays, just ancillary benefits around it. So it really is events like this that are going to help get the economy back on track. Like, we know sport in general, be it Six Nations, GEA, just the impact it does have, music events as well. So without them, everyone is losing out, really.
And Shane, the live entertainment sector, go on. Sorry, you're just going to echo there. Shane, the live entertainment sector's been decimated by the pandemic. For you, look, you're looking for support. You're looking for more support from the state that you've been getting.
Yeah, it's not a great time, John, for the business of mass gatherings, unfortunately.
No.
It's a huge sector. You know, it's in the direction of $2 billion value to the economy. You know, you asked at the start there, where would we be this week? You know, we'd have had about 1 million people or in the direction of it gone through our events since the middle of May. And we'd be heading into Electric Picnic next week, which is, 70,000 people. So, huge numbers, huge value to the economy, to the exchequer, 3+ million bed nights to the tourism sector every year. So, yeah, big business. And we haven't really seen any supports for the non-funded, for the commercial sector to date. So, we get it. We understand, we can't have huge numbers at the moment. We can't put 80,000 people into Slane or, 80,000 people into Croke Park. But, if we can't work, if we can't go out and earn a living, then I think, it's an industry that the government needs to support or lose it. That's where we're at.
So the $40 million for the arts sector, you're not seeing that, are you, Shane?
No, the Arts Council funding doesn't go into the commercial sector. So, the commercial sector sells about 90% of the tickets. So that sector, that 90% of the tickets and the jobs and the employment and the SMEs and the businesses and the venues and the festivals and, audio, lights, PA, sound, trackway, toilets, all of those businesses, none of them will see any of that. So there's, we've benefited, I suppose, to this point from the wage subsidy scheme, the pub payments, but they're gone now or being, being dropped under the new EWSS. And a lot of people in our industry, would be seasonal workers. They earn their yearly living from May to September. And a lot of them struggle to get on to the scheme in the first place because maybe they weren't working in January and February. So, yeah, very, very difficult times for 25,000 plus people that work in the industry. And no real roadmap, no €9 bowl of chicken wings to get around it. We have no light at the end of the tunnel at the moment. So it's a very difficult time.
And many personal stories, I'm sure, Shane, of people being affected.
Look, there's loads of businesses that we work with that are, that are either moving out of the sector, and moving into different areas or just letting people go. And, it's like there's story after story, really. But I think the big thing that we look at is, we've had 10 years, 15 years now where there's just been this skilled workforce built up here. In the 90s, in the early days of Witness and Oxygen, which, I'm sure we'll all remember, all of those staff, all those crew, those businesses came in from the UK. And we don't want to go back to that. We don't want to lose the indigenous workforce, the skills that we have here. And, even if we get to a stage where we can come back and we can do shows and we don't have staff to do it, we're then running into the big issue that we've all kind of forgotten about of Brexit. So, it's very difficult at the moment.
Yeah, Pork, you're also involved in corporate events. You're involved in the restaurant game as well as organising this college football classic. I'm sure you've seen personal stories of people being affected. I'm thinking of the restaurant game. Like, you got less covers with social distancing, more staff probably required. I can't really, it's difficult to see how it's making ends meet.
It's frustrating. And look, we're dealt a set of cards that we're dealt with at the moment, and health has to come first, etc. But I think what probably part of the more frustrating. So yeah, you take we've two restaurants in town, one with an event centre. The two restaurants, Fire and Soul, did reopen on the 29th of June. With 40% less capacity, to be fair to the people of Dublin and the few staycations that we are getting into the city at the moment, they are really supporting and getting in behind us. And that's gratefully supported. We're probably lucky we're around a little while. We're big restaurants from that, but they certainly Friday, Saturday, Sunday are supporting us. Monday to Thursday, it's so in, out, and so varied at this point. And then we move on now from next Tuesday, where we have, thankfully, in the one move that, you know, we have to acknowledge the government fire in relation to the wage subsidy, where literally for our first 2 months being open, we were covered about 80% of salary. That moves down to just under 40% from Tuesday. So that has a bearing on it too as well. So, but we're hanging in there in restaurants, and we appreciate that from the event centre in the round room, as Jane has touched on. It's so frustrating. And last week's announcements around eventing, again, it adds to that, because you take a room like the Round Room, which normally can do a meeting for 700 people or a dinner for 500 people. We got confirmation off the department on Friday past that our capacity for the foreseeable future is 6. That doesn't make much sense, because if you take what the type of business that's looking to come in at the moment in September, October is actually, so we had a night back to awards last Tuesday. They wanted to bring the winners in the room, so they wanted to keep their event under 50. Have the streamline the event, etc. Have the winners there and deal with it in a very safe way, like the restaurant and so on and so forth. So that can't happen. If a PLC needs to do with AGM and they need a certain quorum in a room, currently that can't happen. If we're trying to get domestic tourism, our business tourism working again in the next number of weeks, etc., technically at the moment it can't happen. Albeit at the same time, you can have a wedding for 50 under restrictions, you can have mass for 50, and a number of other things. The inconsistency of the messaging is not helping in any way, shape or form. And that announcement of 2 Tuesdays ago in relation to public transport, only use it in essential, like, I mean, really, it killed us. We've seen it in the restaurant, where with immediate cancellations in the restaurant, then you could see straight away smaller functions like so a communion for 12 and 14 and 16 were cancelling again, and events like that. So coming into the corporate side of this year, albeit we're only looking at a domestic one for this year, people need clear direction and guidelines and so on if we're going to, you know, survive through this. And that's what it's about at the moment. And I find them one of the most frustrating parts of it is the lack of consultation with both us in industry, but also with the agencies. And the likes of Falls Ireland are doing a damn good job at the moment. Hats off, I work with them in a number of areas, but I'm not sure what they're recommending going up through the line is coming out at all. So you've got the NEFIS recommendations coming to Cabinet, Cabinet going to a press conference, and they're not taking a breath to talk to the agencies or talk to industry like ourselves to see, you know, what is the consequence of what they're about to say, or is there a slightly better way to do it, etc. Keeping public health as the number one parameter, and we can't move away from that. But there is some smarter ways and easier ways to deal with this. You know, if you take that transport announcement, which annoyed us, like, I mean, they went after public transport and questioned whether it's a safe place to be. I don't believe they consulted with the NTA on that. They heard it on the same press conference. But somewhere having in Dublin City is around taxis, and because they zone in on that. In other words, there's no consistency, particularly in the evening time, where all taxis are wearing masks or they've got the shield up in the taxi. So the zone should have been in there, making sure that that's right and that's safe for people to move in there, because a hell of a lot of us, and there's one or two of us not within that restaurant bar industry that is open with food, etc., the vast majority are doing a very good job. There is some guys who are completely flaunting the rules, and hopefully the new law of the Gardaí you're getting now will take care of them, or they'll start behaving themselves before the guards have to move on that. But, you know, over the next period of time, we need government to talk to industry. You know, what Jane's saying there, what they represent, etc., they need to be in a conversation. We, in, you know, events like college football or the restaurants or the function room, we need to be in the conversation. That's completely lacking, John.
Yeah, my own take on this, and, like, I'm not a public health expert, but obviously I read the papers and I observe what's going on as a journalist. We can blame the government, and the Golfgate thing was a disaster, obviously. But this seems to be a capacity issue for me with the health service, and that's a decades-long issue that we're not as well equipped as European countries. So if you've got an overload of COVID-19, The health service gets overrun. We got too many people in ICU. We've got a Bergamo situation, potentially. Therefore, we need to prop up the whole of society financially. And whether we're doing enough in that, I think, is the question here. Like, you add in the winter flu, you add in a backlog of conditions, you add in A&E, and then there's a huge pressure on the health service. The capacity seems to be the issue here. And therefore, you need to be able to communicate that to society that, look, we're going to be in a rocky period here for probably about a year until we get some kind of treatment or vaccine for this. And therefore, as you say, Pork, there needs to be widespread communication about, look, what are you going to do about, say, Nebraska and Illinois? Are they going to come to Dublin if they don't get a refund? And Shane, for yourself, what are you going to look at it regarding actually making sure that once you come back with events, with the music events, that you actually have people to staff them, Shane?
Yeah, just on what you said there about the capacity, I think, you know, if anybody that reads the press can see that, I think we've a fifth of the ICU capacity per capita of Germany. So there's decades of mismanagement of the HSC here that's led us to where we are. You know, the HSC are petrified, and, you know, rightly so. It's not their fault. You know, it's not the fault of the doctors and nurses and the staff there that they don't have the capacity. But it is what is feeding into this situation now where, you know, NPHET make recommendations, the government take those recommendations, as Borg said, pick the bits they want. You know, it's a la carte decision making, to use a restaurant term. They pick out what they want off it, you know, so you can have 50 people in a church, but the capacity of the Three Arena, which has 9,500 seats, is 6. You know, it's crazy. But what they're doing is they're picking the risks. So they're saying that, you know, we have to get children back to school, so that's a risk worth taking. We don't have to let people go watch a GAA match. We don't have to let people go to a gig. But just tell us that. Just say, this is why we're doing it. It's clear that that's why. And then support the industries that they're saying, well, we don't see you as necessary at the moment, so we're going to shut you, but here's the support package to tide you over. You say when we come back, you know, we're seeing it already. You know, the power companies that work at events that have done for years, you know, they're all now moving into putting in sliding doors in hotels and sending their staff into Intel and fitting electronic points. You know, the technicians, the skilled people, the people who are mechanical engineers and electrical engineers, they're moving into different sectors. You know, it's what happened in 07, 08 with the construction sector and why it's taken it so long to come back. You know, we'll have the same issue when it's time to turn the lights back on, be it in 6 months or 9 months or 12 months, whenever it is, that we just won't have staff to do it. You know, it's a really strong industry here. Some of the best crew in the world, you know, world tours and European tours start in Ireland and far finish in Ireland for that reason, you know, plus the fans that are here. But, you know, we are already seeing it. People are leaving. Companies are shedding staff. The wage subsidy going to, you know, to 203 or less from next week is going to be, like a lot of restaurants, like small hotels, like all tourism, hospitality, is going to be the final nail in the coffin for a lot of people. And, you know, the pubs keep going on about being the worst hit industry. Well, let me tell you, we are 100% closed. You know, I cannot do a gig tomorrow, you know, or anybody else in my industry, be it Whelan's or Dolan's or Cypress Avenue or the Roisin Dove. We can't put on a show. So we have no opportunity to trade. People are leaving the industry. You know, the next time that, be it Micheál Martin or Leo or whoever it is in a year's time or 2 years' time, you know, goes to DC with the bowl of shamrock and talks about the music from Ireland and the crack and the cure, well, you know, we'll remember what they thought of us in the middle of this. So, yeah, we're losing staff, and that's a very, very big worry about whether or not we'll be able to recover post-COVID.
Kevin, you deal with a lot of sporting organisations like rugby, GAA. You deal with a lot of brands. Like, how brands just, you know, said to themselves, you know what, sponsorship spend here is a discretionary thing. And we got to look at that. Are there issues around like sponsorship going forward with sporting organisations? To me, like the rugby community, for example, they just have to get the show on the road. They have to have good testing, which they've done a brilliant job on, but they just have to get Leinster and Munster on the TV screens for contracts and all that kind of thing. Is there a way of working around this for both sporting organisations and brands?
Yeah, well, this is where sport has an advantage at the moment. And I hear what Shane is saying on the music industry. I mean, the fact of the matter is we are getting some sports matches played on TV, and they are going to get huge figures. So if you think about the Leinster matches tonight, last weekend, upcoming Irish rugby matches, Irish soccer matches, so we're and GAA. So it looks like we're going to get a raft of sports matches on telly. And if you think about that from a brand point of view, they still have a huge opportunity to promote. So from a rights holder's point of view, as long as they can fulfill the majority of their assets, it's a working partnership, a long-term working partnership with the sponsor, and they're in a position to really get through this. So, okay, you mightn't have fans at the stadium, they mightn't be able to do experiential marketing around the game and touch and feel the product, but they will be able to watch the game, and they will be able to, you know, sports sponsorship at the moment is all about storytelling. And there's a huge amount of video content that have gone out. You would have seen the AIB's The Toughest documentary the other night, but a huge amount of other brands, Bank of Ireland, have gone out with a recent advert. Energia have done virtual awards for rugby. So there is a huge opportunity to promote your brand and to promote matches. So that's where sport has an advantage at the moment over all of the other industries. So they can work through it. Now, don't get me wrong, I would say the GAA and the rugby had visions of 20 to 40,000 fans at various games this year, and that'll be a huge financial blow. So they'll have some challenges at the moment by all means. But I think sponsors and brands can just adapt. They'll go a little quiet for a while, and then they'll reassess and adapt as they go, and they will be able to reach the fans. In fact, probably more so at home now. If you've no fans in stadiums and no fans in pubs, your TV audiences will increase.
Have we seen any ratings yet for that, Kevin, or is it too soon to say?
Too soon, but I think if you added up all of the, if GAA won't have any fans this summer and you add up all of that attendance over the course of the championship, and I mean, it is in the hundreds of thousands and millions that won't be at matches now, so you can put that as an addition to the TV ratings. So the current matches, the Leinster matches, will be really good to get the ratings now over the next week or two, but the upcoming Irish football and rugby matches, I would think the ratings will be huge for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a different way of doing things and looking at things. And yeah. What we'll do after two, lads, is we'll reimagine, I suppose, the prospect of maybe getting fans into stadiums and events with a COVID-19 situation. What could be proposed? What supports that you think you need? And also, like in a post-COVID world, what will change and what will be different, like from an innovative point of view. So 53106 listeners, for your text messages, at Off the Ball on Twitter. If you went and got involved in the conversation or ask any questions for our panel guests this afternoon on a sports event management now and going forward, we've got Pádraig O'Kane, Kevin Moore and Shane Dunn on the return of that. We're going to have more discussion after the break, after the news here on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. 53106 is the number for your text messages. Back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can watch us as well on our streaming services for Periscope, at Off the Ball on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store. So on the panel this week, we're chatting to Pádraig O'Kane, the promoter of the Aer Lingus College Football Series, Kevin Moore, the MD of Legacy Communications, a sponsorship and communications agency, and Shane Dunn, the organiser of the Independence Festival and a promoter at MCD. Just guys, in terms of safely getting people into stadiums and events in the future, do you think it's possible during COVID-19? Could we persuade the powers that be that it could work? Shane, start with you on this.
Yeah, like, I think it's definitely possible. I think if you're gonna look at doing stuff like with crowds, you know, the industry to talk to is the people who do it all the time. You know, it's the people who run events like Slane, like the St. Patrick's Day Festival, like the American College Football. You know, people who are used to managing crowds, managing their movements. You know, the maybe poorly named UK company SAS did a report on Croke Park just last week, that the capacity would be safe at 1.5 meter distancing of about 25,000 people. I think what happens then with that, though, is it goes back to the likes of Neffet, and they start talking about the Lewis and the Dart and how will people, you know, get in and out of these games. So, you know, there's a wider issue of the layout of our cities and the structures that kind of comes into force. But, you know, can we do 25,000 people safely in Croke Park, for instance, as a standalone? I have no doubt that we can, and social distance. You look at the systems that are going to be in place for the NFL, for instance, in a couple of weeks' time when that kicks back in the States. And, you know, that's what they're going with. You know, they're going with capacities of around 30%, you know, seating in pods, ticketing, all digital ticketing so that they can contact trace, selling to family pods, you know, no cash on site, frictionless security. You know, I'm not sure I'd always believe Jerry Jones when he says, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, when he says he's fully confident that there will be no transmission. But, you know, there are systems we can use. I think as an industry, we're better positioned to do it than anybody else. You know, you can go into Brown Thomas at the moment. I think the capacity is 450, you know, with no tracing. You know, we can do six people in the three arena. So, like, we're positioned to do it. I think we can. I think we just need to be trusted and given the opportunity to do so.
And, Pádraig, at the moment, we actually have college football coming back in the States today. You have Central Arkansas against Austin, and their commissioner isn't sure if college football will be allowed to get off the ground and have a season that's completed. As things stand, you've got the University of Illinois against the University of Nebraska coming to Dublin next year. As things stand, the way things are at the moment, would you have that game right now?
No. Without a vaccine, you won't. Let's be clear and straight about it, because of the amount of logistics involved in moving people from country to country. But equally, the game between Illinois and Nebraska is not happening in the States. And, you know, we talk about sports management and what sports worth to the economy. The University of Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, which is literally in the middle of nowhere, the joy of being down there last October, their athletics department, they have an annual revenues of $140 million. Losing football, which they have now done for the autumn, may get it back in the spring. That's $100 million of a loss from losing football alone. So these universities more or less have a Premier League team as part of their structure, which is incredible when you get into the funding of it. So the Big Ten, which Illinois and Nebraska have made a decision not to play an autumn series, they're hopeful of playing in the spring. It's watch and see at the moment. Some schools are, the likes of Navy, are starting next Saturday. They play in an empty stadium, so they're playing behind closed doors. So it's because of the different conference system over there, it's a mixed bag and so on and so forth. But to take it on, to just take one step back for a second, John, I think we have to learn to live with this virus, and a lot of what Shane's saying there makes a lot of sense, to talk to industry, etc. No one is saying open up the economy, because we can see the difficulties with that, etc. But we have successfully opened up a number of industries, and you know, you take restaurants, which we know very well, and been working on around protocols for a while. You know, we're doing good in that sector. We're holding down. We're holding our own. We've some serious protocols in that have cost base comes with them, etc. But it's been done safely and it's been brought through. So, you know, can that be brought through into eventing? It can, with consolidation and bring it on. And just on them employees, the event industry, conference industry, I don't think are full of people with logistics. You know, they've been on the government wage scheme for the last, God, as many months, and will need support for the next number of months. They could help the Department of Education, you know, getting schools back open and running. So it's not just a case of do nothing with the lads. We're already on the state payroll in certain ways. They certainly could help in other areas, because if they can put 80,000 people into a feeding lane, they can help with schools and so on around logistics. Just on Illinois and Nebraska, we have taken a direction this weekend on it. We have to work on the basis that the game will happen next year, because you just don't start to plan something to get the green light at the end of April, May or June. Yeah, looks like vaccine is working, international travel is back in full scheme, etc. We just couldn't organise an event of that size at that point. So we have to continue on. And one of the things that we're starting our campaign around this weekend, and we believe other events and the industry needs to come in behind this, is encouraging events and participants to come to Ireland next year, certainly the second half of the year. And the only way we're going to do that is Ireland Inc., as joint stakeholders, the hotels, the airlines, the airports, and so on and so forth, is we have to change our terms and conditions in the immediate, that if COVID-19 or a global pandemic is still here and the event cannot take place, that customer can get 100% refund. So certainly we're working, all our packages are in and around that, and working with our partners on that basis, which is huge risk, as you can appreciate, because we've got to continue to pay our teams and all the structures around that and so on. But we need hoteliers in particular to come in behind, because a group is six people. If you go to book, you know, three or four rooms, that's seen as a group booking. And if you ask someone from Nebraska or Illinois at the moment who you have to pay 100% by the 1st of January, the 30th of January, etc., they're going to say no. It's as simple as that, if it's non-refundable. So we have to be smarter. There's no point coming to the screen when it comes. Please God, it'll come the first quarter of next year, or the second quarter. You know, but if it is the year after, whenever it comes, we can't just be waiting, okay, let's start now, because we will lose that year. So pre-planning, pre-structuring we need in place, and certainly we're calling on that today, that we have to look at 21, particularly the second half of the year. How do we convince customers to sign up now, particularly the international customers, in a safe way, that when and if we get the green light, that we have business to come in almost immediately, as opposed to, oh, let's start planning for it now and you've missed another year. So that's my big call out today as we look at post COVID. Not taking away for a second the seriousness of where we are at the moment, but if we don't start looking post COVID and post vaccine, we'll be standing, you know, looking at each other when that happens, and that's not going to be good for anybody either.
What do you think of that, Kevin, from a brand and from a sponsorship and from a hospitality point of view?
Well, from the hospitality point of view, I think we need to start building confidence. So at the moment, there's you know, no attendance at anything. Shane made the point that, you know, it would only be six in the three arenas. So obviously that won't happen. So I think you mentioned it in the news round at the very start. Chelsea and Brighton are trialling 2,500 fans in their pre-season friendly. And that's hugely important. But if you look at the finances behind that, they're only charging £5 to £15 a ticket. So there's no money being made out of that. But it's a huge exercise over in the Premier League to test, you know, at the very start of this, you mentioned about how to get the fans in and out. Like, the stadiums aren't the problem once you're sitting inside them. We've got a huge amount of spaced out stadiums. It's getting fans in and out. It's toilets. So they need to trial it with smaller amounts of fans at the start, I feel. And I really welcome the Chelsea Brighton piece. What you'll see is they'll learn a huge amount from it. They'll build confidence. People will see some fans in the stadium. So it was great seeing the Leinster match at the Aviva Stadium recently, and they did a brilliant job to get it going. I think that's a 200-person operation. So the next move in Ireland, and I think sport can play a real lead role here, is to start trialling smaller groups of fans into it, so you can build up, as Shane mentioned, to 25,000 if that's going to be the capacity. I'm sure they'd like even more. But if they learn, be it rugby, soccer, GEA, any sporting and music, obviously, if they can get them going, if they can learn from the first few events how to get fans in and out, how to congregate, the start times that fans should arrive, it's going to be a pain for everyone, but it will be much better to see, you know, 1,000 people in a stadium and know the next time that they can build it up to 2 and 3 and work their way up.
53106, commercial people who are only interested in profit are not those who should be advising us on safe options. And basing protocols on what's done in the States is ridiculous. That is from Jerry. Well, Jerry, we all have got to make a living. We're all in the entertainment business. Anybody who works in commercial business, you know, wants to do a good job and wants to have people have a good time. So we're just trying to see and examine and discuss whether we can do this safely, given obviously the more serious issues that are at hand within society. Because obviously mental health is important for everybody, and we're trying to see what we can look at here. And based on examples, as Brighton, Chelsea, one of them, what they're going to do in the Premier League, possibly what they're going to do in the States in the NFL. Hi, John, I'm an Irish rugby 10-year ticket holder in the Aviva. I have received my tickets, but no refund for the upcoming autumn games. But there doesn't appear to be any social distancing, judging by the seat numbers. No way I'll attend any games until a vaccine is available. Sport solely on TV viewing for a foreseeable future. Sadly, that is a mark. The events industry is not being given the chance to prove we can safely do gatherings. We've had contact tracing at our fingertips pre-COVID. We've always had safe, controlled environments. Shane has been a powerful voice for the sector. Why no one from the government consults him or anyone in this industry before decisions are made is madness. Just on the actual user experience of trying to get into an event, guys, safety, shouting, expands droplets, whether you got masks on or whatever, handrails, the unpleasant experience of wearing a mask for so long, the fact the stadium needs to be full to have a proper atmosphere, getting in and out without it turning into an airport security type situation, catering, how would that work? Would it end up just being an awkward, unenjoyable experience for people?
I think it'd be amazing how quickly you'll get used to people. Irish people maybe are a little bit poor at arriving at a match last minute, but you get used to it very quickly. So I think if you know you're going to get to see the game and maybe you build on an extra hour to that, it's fine. I mean, we've seen in France in the last couple of days, actually, they've just opened up their music events to no social distancing with up to 5,000 people. But they will have masks and they will have a huge amount of protocols going in. So it is step by step, and it is going to be a different life. As we know, Pádraig mentioned, we're going to have to just live with it. So you're going to have to find ways of doing it. Otherwise, all of the grassroots events, be it venues and that, are going to start to go one by one.
And I think just to add to that, you know, like in March, we were told that, you know, children were super spreaders. and they went back to school the other day. You know, at the end of the day, it's a novel virus. You know, people, we're learning about it all the time. You know, people far more qualified than I am are learning about it, and new information comes out. You know, France, in certain areas of France, they still do have red zones where that 5,000 hasn't come in. But, you know, it does appear that, you know, 2 meter distancing outside without a mask is safer than 1 meter distancing inside with a mask. So, you know, why the capacity in Ireland at the moment outdoors for an event is 15. You know, this is what we're saying. We're not saying that we're greedy. We're not saying we want to go out and, you know, earn loads of money. What we're saying is that every decision as an event, you know, event controller or a safety officer that we make in our daily lives, be it in a theatre or the Three Arena or on grass, you know, is about the safety of the people in attendance. You know, we do it as an industry better than anybody. And at the moment, as that texter said, you know, we're not being consulted. You know, we're not being trusted to try anything, you know, be it 50 people, 100 people, 200 people. You know, whereas, as I said previously, you know, TK Maxx can have 187 or you can put 450 people into Brown Thomas. So, you know, it's a little bit about fairness. We get it. Nobody wants to circumnavigate public health advice. But if we can't go and trade and we can't go and do what we're good at or earn a living, well, then, you know, the government need to come in and support that. And they haven't to date. So that's, you know, it, just to go back to that texter about the, you know, the greedy people that want to earn loads of money. You know, it's not about that at all. You know, it's about earning a living. It's about people's mental health. It's about businesses who have mortgages, who have loans, who have rent, who have rates, you know, about those people being supported. And, you know, right now they're not. And that's the really big issue here.
Brands, you know, Kevin, that sponsor sports teams, is it a discretionary spend? Like, are sponsors banking on loyalty once this, you know, situation improves to stick with organisations?
Yeah, I think it depends on the length of your partnership that you're gonna stick with the long term. I think if you're, the Olympics is a really tough example, a good example here. So
is it going to happen, Kevin? Is it going to happen in your view?
Like, I was reading today that the US Tennis Open at the moment starts on Monday, and they've got 1,000, basically a bubble of 1,000 people around the athletes, physios, coaches. Like, if you think about that, that's a pretty large bubble, but that's the number of people they're trying to keep safe and testing, whether it's every day, but testing for it as well. So that's the scale of operation for the US Tennis Open. You can multiply that by 10, I'd say, for the Olympics. So I would say it's very hard to, at the start of this pandemic, when they postponed the Olympics by a year, I thought it was the best decision ever, and it was an absolute cert to happen. Fast forward 6 months, and we're still, you know, in the middle of, I suppose, no end date around this. So I think the fans around travel and fans around the Olympics next year, in my view, is very unlikely. But I do think they'll do everything they can to host the Olympics. It's still an incredible amount of athletes and organisers to move. But there is time, so I'd be very hopeful that can happen. And then if that happens, sponsors have a great opportunity to just pick up where they left off last year. The only thing I'd say is you have a lot of the Olympic sponsors now gone quiet this year because they're waiting to see what happened. They would have gone into this with a certain amount of spend in mind. We work with Indeed, we were in the middle of a campaign with them, and it's paused really until next year. But in the meantime, they're still doing a program with the athletes about amateur athletes and jobs and things like that. But really, when it hits January, if there's a bit of clarification, all of those sponsors of Team Ireland will be able to restart their campaigns, assuming there's an Olympics.
And to say a GA Championship, Kevin, for example, if it doesn't happen, are there contractual issues then around a sponsor that's already agreed to put its name to a championship for a certain amount of time?
I think there are, and I think there's no getting away from that. If the championships happen in some way, they'll have fulfilled most of their rights. If they don't happen at all, what they might look at doing is extend the partnership by another year down the road. But it would be a big blow for the GEA if it doesn't happen, because there's no real way of them fulfilling the rights. So they're going to have to come to some arrangement with the sponsors, and I would say the most prudent one is to extend by a year, which does mean that they will lose out on, if that was to happen, they would lose out on a year's income.
Pork, well, that texter that talked about commercial people only interested in profit, not those who should be advising us on safe options and basing protocols on what's happened in the States. What's your answer to that?
certainly from speaking personally, but I know our industry in here in Ireland, and we're regarded as one of the strongest around the world, is no one will do anything that's not safe. That's the key point of it. And no one will attend, or very little people will attend, if it's not a safe environment. And that's key. Like, I mean, it would be very easy for us as a promoter of a singular event, that the secondary industry to us were restaurateurs and venue operators in first, to walk away from this. And, you know, we've taken a nice bat on the 2020 game that's not in Dublin this weekend, and we're prepared to do that again next year. At the same time, we're making sure that everybody is refunded, and we're also making sure that any sponsorship funded that went into 2020 has been moved to 2021. In other words, the 5-game series starts next year. So certainly, from our perspective, we certainly get it, and this has put our business model completely back, and we're working on the basis that we may get it back in future years. But we also have to acknowledge that we did a little bit of work on the two universities, Illinois and Nebraska, and asked them what are their concerns in relation to this game happening next year, et cetera. And there was two, the fare of travel connected to COVID-19, the respective safety measures in Ireland. So through a marketing campaign and so on, at the right time, we are going to have to convince them that it will be safe to come to Ireland when the time is right, post-vaccine, etc. And their second one is their concern that they will lose deposits paid on or to be charged non-refundable cancellation fees in the event the game is cancelled for that reason. So they're the two. And I'd say customers of any other event could be the very same. It's safety first, and then are they going to be out of pocket too? So if we don't, as an event promoter around college football, guarantee them on both things, they're not going to attend and there won't be an event. So I disagree with the caller in relation to the event industry in particular. The risk that the industry takes on a regular basis around taking an act on from an MCD point of view or Aiken or whoever, and hoping the tickets will sell, etc. And they have good days and they have bad days, and it's the same in conference and banqueting and sporting events. So I would disagree, certainly from the people who are on this call and who run our major events in this country.
Okay, www.collegefootballireland.com, by the way, if you want to check out more about what college football has brought to the country and could bring in the future. Songs from an Empty Room, I remember watching that, Shane, on television. I thought it was amazing. You had Bono on the Edge, but more importantly, the people who were there that night, I thought it was really inspiring. But I suppose it's the kind of thing you don't want to just, oh, that was great, and then people forget about it. Are remote festivals, concerts, things like that, financially viable in the short term? Is that a potential solution until we get to where we need to get to, or is this all about getting more support from the state? And actually, obviously, you're making a very strong argument for that today, just as much as many other industries are.
Yeah, like the TV show Songs was great to raise money for Minding Creative Minds, which is a mental health and support trust for people in the industry. So for musicians and also for people who work in the industry, you know, who need someone to talk to. It just started in June, you know, right in the middle of this. They've taken a huge amount of calls. It was great to work on it. You know, it was nice to be in a room doing a gig, albeit, you know, masked up and distanced. I think there's a simple answer to that. You know, I think people have, to an extent, and the callers have touched on it earlier, people are used to watching matches on TV. You know, like if you watch 50 matches in a year, you might attend, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 of them, unless you're a kind of a diehard season ticket holder. But it's something you're used to. You're used to watching it in the pub or at home. Going to a gig, a live gig, be it theatre or drama or, you know, Metallica at Slane, that's about a connection between the fan and the artist, and it's very hard to get that experience through a screen. The other thing, I suppose, is that it's a tiny cohort of musicians and songwriters who can earn a living without live. I'm talking, you know, a fraction of 1%. The rest of them and acts that you would, you know, maybe Joe Public kind of assumes are very wealthy. You know, they're getting 80-85% of their income from playing live, you know, from playing in venues, from playing festivals. So, you know, without that, you're going to see a lot of those, you know, start to struggle, you know, very, very soon. There are some acts that are doing well. The American country acts seem to be kind of doing well with, you know, kind of songs from their own kitchen, monthly subscription services. But again, it's a tiny, tiny fraction. You know, I think people forget that. They look at, you know, us at MCD or Aiken or Pod doing shows, and it's Slane and Croke Park and it's the Three Arena. But they forget that the industry we're talking about is also the industry that does the Clonakilty Guitar Festival or the Panto, or, you know, the DJ for your 50th birthday or the band for your wedding. You know, that's all the live entertainment sector. And every single one of them, you know, from small towns and villages, festivals around the country, right up to Picnic and Slain and Croker and the RDS, it's all, you know, in trouble and none of it is being supported. So there are some income streams there for a very small fraction of the industry. And that's kind of that's the crux of it, I guess.
So wage subsidy scheme, say Restart Grant, rates waiver, corporate and income tax rebates, these are not enough, is what you're saying.
The problem is a huge amount of the SMEs that work in this sector are 1, 2, 3 person companies, and then there's huge amounts of freelancers. If you delve into the systems that are there already that came from the July stimulus, for instance, you know, if you're not a bricks and mortar building, you know, if you're not someone who pays rates, who pays rent, you know, there's very little in it for you. You know, a Restart Grant of 10 grand for a festival with a yearly budget of 2 million. You know, that's maybe already was 300, 400,000 euros committed to 2020 when it got, you know, when it got culled, you know, is not going to do it. You know, wage subsidy scheme is great if you have some income coming in. If your income is at zero and you still have, you know, bank loans, if you're an audio supplier with 2 million quids worth of PA sitting in a warehouse and you still have rent and rates and loans, you know, 203 quid a week on the wage subsidy scheme is not really going to put a dent in the 20 grand a month that you owe to the bank. And, you know, they got their 6-month, 3-month, and then another 3-month break on that. That's up now. And, you know, despite the Irish government and the taxpayer owning 70% of AIB, we don't seem to be in a position to put manners on the banks and stuff like this. So, you know, we're going to see now in September, October, November, huge amounts of these SMEs going out of business, lots of the freelancers going into other sectors. And I think, you know, unless in the recovery plan in October and the budget, there's, you know, substantial and real, you know, access to cash, really, for the businesses in particular. You know, you'll see an industry in January, February that's completely decimated. And, you know, you're looking at, it's not a year or two of recovery, then you could be looking at a decade, you know, before we get back to the kind of levels we were at.
Kevin, if we're at a worst case scenario, as Shane is kind of outlining there, what are the options for the event industry, especially if it's sport? Are you able to sell other forms of experience that can actually help the stakeholders in the businesses?
Yeah, I mean, that recovery plan that Shane mentioned is key for the industry as a whole. I mean, the government have done a lot of great things in terms of supporting SMEs, but I suppose everyone's going to have to reimagine events. I'm not as worried about it in the sport in terms of you know, being able to view matches virtually or that, but other events I'd be concerned about. But the restart of this industry, like Germany have put 80 million into papering over the cracks, but they've put a billion into a restart culture fund, if you know what I mean. So that actual longer term thinking is really what's needed now. So a restart of the whole industry, be it sport, arts, music, culture, is essential, a bit of longer term thinking, you know. And I get the government are trying to fix everything at the one time, but that marker that Shane mentioned in October is actually really important, that we get sight of a longer term support system for everyone from sport to music.
And Pork, what do you think about that?
No, absolutely. And that's why everything we're doing at the moment, we need consultation with government, because we have to think when the green light comes, how we're going around it. And there's no point thinking about it then. It's better to be, and the lads touched on it very much. So there's an industry that potentially, if lads leave audiovisual companies or lighting companies and go a different direction in tech, etc., you know, they weren't there 10, 12 years, but they won't be there when we come back. So trying to get the industry going again will be very, very difficult. And that is concerning. But the only way that we're going to is get a roadmap going for this industry, because, you know, I know we only represent, if you take tourism, sport and hospitality, what are we, 10% of GMP in total? But why do big international companies pick Ireland to come and set up their base, etc.? It's because of the hospitality. It's because of the concerts, the sporting events, that the infrastructure that's here, that guys can have a balance in lifestyles. So without that at the back end of this, having the Irish hospitality here and the level that we're used to, and the events industry to go with that, we could be looking at a dark enough place.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking over the last hour, it's been quite a sobering conversation, guys. Like, if you're an airline pilot, you're, you know, what are you going to do at the moment?
if you're a supermarket worker, you're okay. It's just the unfairness and the kind of the indiscriminate nature of this has been very tough on a lot of people. I suppose most especially in your industry, Shane, I think sport is kind of halfway there at the moment, but obviously Pork, you know, and Kevin, you're meant to be here with a massive event this weekend and a really an event that Ireland and Dublin can be so proud of, this college football, this Aer Lingus game between Navy and Notre Dame, the first one of the season. Just to finish on a positive note, guys, what do you look forward to most when all this is over?
Sitting in Croke Park at an All Ireland football final, or genuinely, it is, you know, sitting down at a live sporting event. That's the goal for me.
I'd take a wet 4 a.m. muddy loadout of Slane at this point, John. You know,
yeah.
I'd take anything that would you know, get me back in a field or a gig. Like, you know, my past, I told you before, is, you know, I worked in the Department of Ag for 6 years. I have a little bit of a history more on the microbiology side, but you know, I think, you know, 99 2000, I was in college in UL, and the lecturers then were talking about the next pandemic, you know, so we kind of, you know, got to now, and obviously changed industries, but I just want to be standing on the steps, you know, in the Three Arena when the place goes dark and the crowd goes, you know, the crowd screams. You won't get that, or I can't get that, you know, working in any other industry. So, you know, it will come back. You know, a quote from that TV show, two far smarter production event producers than I, Pádraig Bourne and Pierce Doherty, who said, at the moment, it's like a wet day in Slane, but the sun will shine again and the people will come again. So, look, that's what we're looking forward to.
And Pádraig, for you, I'd say that's having Nebraska and Illinois in Dublin this time next year.
That and giving my mother a hug. She celebrated her birthday last week and we had to miss out on it. So
yeah,
a little bit of normalities, you know, the human side of it. But absolutely, if we're here talking this time next year in Illinois and Nebraska and their colours are all around town, that more than likely means we're through it. We have a vaccine. We're back to a level of normality, or close to a level of normality. And by God, wouldn't that be a great place to be?
It will be Pádraig O'Kane, Kevin Moore and Shane Dunn. You've been such great sports to share your time with us on Off the Ball Saturday on the panel this week. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Okay, 53106, your text messages at Off the Ball on Twitter. Back after this.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.